Today's daf in Masechet Eruvin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Yud Gimel. We're holding a daf Yud Beis Amud Beis right at the bottom. And because basically we have what is mostly a Agadata daf today, so I'm not going to give you any kind of big introductions, and we'll just get straight into it. So remember the lesson that we had in the Mishnah was that Mishum Rabbi Shmuel Amar Tamid Echad. So there was this Talmud who told Rabbi Akiva that the machlokas, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, about whether you need a korah and a lechi, or whether a korah alone is okay, and a lechi alone is okay, that was only if it's more than four amas wide, but if up till 10, obviously. But if it's less than four amas wide, there's no such machlokas. Rabbi Akiva said that's nonsense. So that's not true. They argue across the board. Now, the question is like this. Because Rabbi Akiva isn't saying anything new. I mean, the Mishnah began with the fact that there was a machlokas without indicating that there was any kind of difference between one size or another side, in which case Rabbi Akiva is basically just repeating the Tanakama, asks the Gemara. So Rabbi Akiva, Eimer al Zev al Zeh nechleku, Rabbi Akiva anu Tanakama. Ah, the difference is, remember, Rav Achle, some say it was Rabbi Chiyo, but in any event, we had said before that there was also a minimal shear, which was four Tvachim. If anything less than four tvachim, then you don't have to worry about anything at all. You don't require a lechi, you don't require a korah. And remember that we talked about how it must be that it was shaped sort of like Daniel actually was kind enough to post it on the daf, a picture of the actual street, that it was shaped like that street that he posted, which is Rechov HaChatzotzra, so that way the doorway was small, but there was actually a reshus there. Anyway, so we don't know. Velo misaime. I mean, it's not clear who held that it's all the way down, even less than four tvachim, and who held that it only starts at four tvachim. That isn't clear. But the fact that there are two shitas in the Mishnah imply that there's a difference between them. Omer Rabbi Akiva. So there's an interesting bright that it goes like this. Rabbi Akiva says Rabbi Shmuel never said anything like that. Something wrong? No. Lo amar Rabbi Akiva. Lo amar Rabbi Shmuel davar zeh. What he means is, when you use that kind of lashon, is that, look, I can guarantee you one thing, that someone that is as knowledgeable as Rabbi Ishmael, it's ridiculous to say that he said that, he never would have said it. So in other words, what Rabbi Akiva was clearly implying is that there's no grounds whatsoever. He knows personally what the real machlokas is, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, and there's simply nothing to discuss. That is not the case. And then, strangely enough, after saying, well, Rabbi Shmuel never said that, it was Oto HaTalmid, it was the Talmud that said that. And you know what? Halacha is like that Talmud. That doesn't make any sense. A gufakash. I mean, first you say, no way Rabbi Shmuel could have said something like that, which implies that obviously that cannot be the case. And Rabbi Akiva is saying there's no way because it simply isn't true. And then you say, but Halacha is like the Talmud who says that it is true. Rabbi Akiva said that to let everybody know how much he felt that it was very, very meaningful that Talmud had said that, because it made so much sense. He wasn't truly paskening like it, because he knew for a fact that that wasn't the machlokas, but it sure should have been the machlokas. He was trying to encourage his Talmidim. This is a very different usage of the language lechadeid ba-talmidim, as does his point. Usually, lechadeid ba-talmidim means, I say something wrong, and you're supposed to catch me. In this case, I want to encourage you to say your own sfaras in exactly the same way that this Talmud did. It wasn't Rabbi Shmuel, it was this Talmud, and you know what? He was right on target. Whether he's right or wrong, that's something else, but he was right on target. And Reb Nachum bar Yitzchak says, well, he never really said it was the halacha. He said, nearing, it makes so much sense that that should be the halacha. But he never said that that was the halacha l'maisa. Well, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, you know, there's some historical background to this, as Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, because whenever we find somebody quoting a certain Talmud that was saying something in front of Rabbi Akiva, we know who that is. That certain Talmud, Inoela Rabbi Meir, because it was Rabbi Meir who was a star Talmud, both by Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. So when he would say to Rabbi Akiva, you know, Rabbi Shmuel said X, it was him reporting on the studies that he had done with Rabbi Shmuel. D'tanya, Amar Rabbi Meir. Because here's the background. It says in a brighter, Rabbi Meir says, when I used to learn by Rabbi Shmuel, I always used to put kankantom into my ink. So, okay, machlokas is exactly what kankantom is, whether it's vitriol or something else. little bit of a problem, because remember the Gemara had said Kan Kantom was Ushkefi, was the Shavka de Ushkefi. It's that dark stuff that the black that they use for shoemaking. And vitriol, as Tosis points out, is really cupric sulfate, and cupric sulfate is not black. It's more green, of course. So, okay, but in any event, whatever that Kan Kantom is, I used to put it in there, and he never said a word. He didn't think it was a problem. And then when I came to learn by Rabbi Akiva, he said, no, you're not allowed to do that. What? Wait a minute. Something's wrong with this whole story, because we have Shmuel quoting Rabbi Meir as saying very much something else. And that was that he said, quote, when I used to learn by Rabbi Akiva, the exact opposite of this, when I started off learning by Rabbi Akiva, I used to put Kan Kantom then into the ink. He didn't say anything to me. And apparently he thought it was okay. And then when I came to Rabbi Yishmael, wait a minute, I thought you said before you first learned by Rabbi Yishmael, then you learned by Rabbi Akiva, and then you're reversing it, because now you're saying, and when I came to Rabbi Yishmael, he said to me, my dear son, what exactly did you for a living? So I said to him, well, I'm a sofer, lavlara nochi. So he said to me, oh, that is a very, very, very important kind of malacha. You better be extremely careful, because everything counts. So have a zahir b'malachtecha shem malachtecha malachet shamayim hi. I mean, look, if you're mechaser ot echad, you leave one letter out, or you add an extra letter, you can literally destroy the entire world. I mean, absolute disaster. As a matter of fact, Time magazine even went ahead and publicized this as a disaster. They put on their cover, God is dead, or something like that, which would leave out the olive from Hashem Elokechem Emet. Right? So you would be destroying the world if you would do that. That's exactly the example actually Rashi brings. And yeah, so they got a little bit mixed up in Time magazine. You know, they went out of business because of that, I think, or something. Anyway, and if you add an additional letter, so like let's say you add the word Bereshit Boru Elohim. Then there would be more than one. That would be a disaster too. So I think one little letter can really mess up the world. So I answered him. Now, of course, this answer is a complete non sequitur, and the Gemara is going to ask, what in the world does this answer have to do with what he was told? So I told him, oh, there's no problem about that, because I have Kan Kantom, and I put Kan Kantom in the ink, which settles all these issues. How in the world does this? Okay, we don't know. But anyway, I put that into the ink, and that should cure everything. So then he says to me, what? You think you're allowed to put Kan Kantom into the ink? How could you put Kan Kantom in the ink if the Torah said that when it comes to taking a sota, you're supposed to take the parsha sota and erase it in the water? But if you would write it with Kan Kantom, then you wouldn't be able to erase it, because Kan Kantom is completely indelible, and putting it into water is not going to do anything. So that means it has to be tavshi acholi machot. It's got to be the type of writing that you could completely wipe, and you can't. Wait a minute. Can you just, before we get to this, can you just please tell me what in the world this conversation was going on? What did Rabbi Shmuel to say to him, and he replies this business about Kan Kantom? We're obviously missing something. Yeah. What happened was that Rabbi Meir answered him, well, I happen to be a tremendous bucky, and I would never, even chaseros v'yaseros, I will never make a mistake. Loti, and I make a mistake with even where there's like an issue of whether use avav, don't use avav, whatever. I know every single the chaser v'yaseros. So for sure that I'm a bucky in, but I am so careful that I am also even worried that maybe when I turn aside, a fly will land on a dalet, and it'll erase the little edge of the dalet and turn the dalet into a reish. And that will change the whole Sefer Torah. So to make sure that doesn't happen, I have this magic ingredient. And that ingredient is Kan Kantom. I put that into the ink. And that means you can never erase the dalet. So I was just trying to show him how makbid I am. But, I mean, doesn't this like sort of ruin the history lesson? I mean, first of all, the Shemosh HaShemosh is backwards. I mean, in the first story, he first went to Rabbi Shmuel, and then went to Rabbi Akiva, like our Mishnah. And in the second story, he first went to Rabbi Akiva, and then he went to Rabbi Shmuel. And also, he flipped the Shitas. Who asered it, and who was matered? In the first Braita, it was the asering. Rabbi Akiva was the one who said, no, you can't do that. And then it's here, it's now Rabbi Yishmael who says you can't do that. So, I mean, look, as far as understanding what the history was of his learning, that's not so terrible. That I can understand, because Shimush HaShimush Lokasha, it could simply be like this. He first went to learn by Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had like the top quality yeshiva and everything. So Rabbi Meir figures, I can handle that. He comes to Rabbi Akiva's yeshiva. He doesn't understand a word. So then he realizes, oh my God, forget it. This is not the yeshiva for me. I'm going back. I'm going to go to Rabbi Shmuel's yeshiva, which is a much easier yeshiva. So we go ahead. There's crazy people out there. So then he goes ahead. When he cannot work out what it is he's trying to talk about, he then goes to Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael teaches him everything, and he learns all of the Gemara, meaning that he doesn't really need to understand everything exactly, but he gets everything straight. And then he goes to learn with Rabbi Akiva. After he knows everything, then he comes to understand everything. So that part makes sense, but I mean, who indeed was the one that said it's usur, and who is indeed the one who says that it's mutter? I mean, that is a problem. Says the Gemara, yep, that certainly is a problem. Okay, so we don't have in the Gemara a solution to that. Anyway, Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda said that Rabbi Meir actually paskin like this. He said, you can use kankantom, and that's what I do. You go ahead and use kankantom, l'tochadyo, as long as you don't put it into the Parsha Sota. Because that's really what he told me. He told me that the mocker of not using kankantom is that the Torah said that it has to be k'tav she'yacholim machot. So fine. So that's exactly refers to Parsha Sota. You're supposed to erase that particular Parsha, which means it has to be erasable, theoretically. So that Parsha, don't put in kankantom. Rabbi Akiva Omer Mishmo, no, it's not that he said you can't write Parsha Saita in the Sefer Torah. He said you can't write Parsha Saita that you're going to use in the Beis HaMikdash for a Saita, which is meant to be erased, not the Sefer Torah, which is not meant to be erased in the Parsha Saita. He never said you have to write the Sefer Torah itself in a way that makes it usable for a Saita. Okay, so apparently, according to that pshat, you don't ever erase the Parsha in the Sefer Torah itself. In other words, if you need a Parsha Saita, so you can't cut out the Parsha from the Sefer Torah and erase it. So, I mean, what's the machlokas here? My binayu. Omer Rav Yirmiya, the machlokas is whether you can use a regular Sefer Torah and take the Parsha Saita and use it to be Beidik HaSaita. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, you could actually use that. And therefore, it needs to be written in such a way that it's theoretically usable. Whereas according to Rabbi Yaakov, no, you have to write it specifically, lishma, and therefore, you're not going to be able to use the Sefer Torah anyway. So why would mocha, k'tav she'yacholim machot, that would have nothing to do with a Sefer Torah. It only has to do with the special Saita scroll that you write in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, it turns out the Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yaakov are arguing in a machlokas tanoim that we know about, because it says in a braisa, "Ein megillah takshira lashkot basotacher." Suppose a sota, you wrote a megillah sota, and then the sota, before she drinks of it, remember, she before it's erased, she can simply say, forget it, I admit it, forget it. And then we have nothing to do with that parsha, right? So the question is, can I use it for another site? Okay, so I put it away, and then if it's ever needed again, we'll take it out. So the Tana over here says, no. Ein Megillah takshir lashkot basotacheret. Whereas Rabbi Achai Bar Yoshia says, sure, you can use the same Megillah. So apparently the question is like this. Do you have to write the Megillah Saita specifically for the Sota that you're going to be using it for? Or can you simply use a Parva Megillah Saita? Because it's a matter who it's reading, written for. Says Rav Papa, excuse me, that does not follow from that machloket at all. Because, I mean, the only machlokas that we have over here is that the Tana Kama said in that Braita is that if you wrote a Saita scroll for a woman named Rochel, and then Rochel doesn't use it, you can't use it for Leah. That's all that he said. But that's obviously different, because once it was miyuchad for the purpose of Rochel, lo hadra min hatka l'shum Leah. Now you can't now detach it from that lishma for use it for someone else, but a Sefer Torah is not written for anybody. A Sefer Torah is sort of a generic Sefer Saita, a Parsha Saita. So use that Parsha Saita for anybody, Rochel or Leah. You certainly can't prove that this machlokas is the same as that machlokas. So that doesn't follow. So, maybe everybody would agree that you certainly could. You could look at it the other way also. You know, you could look at the opposite extreme. You could say, actually, the two machlokasin are not nogea for the opposite reason, okay? Then ad kan lo koma Rav Acha bar Yoshias. Forget about the Tanakama. Why did Rav Acha bar Yoshias say over there that you can write a Parsha Saita for Rochel and then use it for Leah? But that's because it was written for a Saita. If you use the Sefer Torah, it wasn't written for any Saita. So maybe that's not good, because you would still need for writing, as the Torah said, because of et halota ela. You didn't write this halota ela for that. You were just writing a Sefer Torah. So avagabe Torah, where we have a Sefer Torah, which is written for learning from. Is that written for Saitas? So delit la meit k'tiva, maybe everybody would agree that you're not able to be mechik. So basically, you look at it in either direction, and no matter how you look at it, there's certainly no raya from one to the other. But as far as Rav Acha bar Yoshias is concerned, why can you use it? I mean, everybody agrees that a get has to be written l'shma, right? That's because it says v'katavla, right? I mean, it's the famous, I mean, we have that Mishnah, famous Mishnah. Katav get l'gareshet ishto. Somebody writes a get to divorce his wife, and then he changed his mind, and now a guy who wanted to divorce his wife meets up with him and said, well, this is an amazing bargain. I hear you have a get available. I happen to have the same name as you, and I have a wife with the same name as your wife, and I've been hoping to get rid of her for a long time. I can never afford a get. If you're ready to give me that get for, like, you know, 50 cents on the dollar, it would save my life. Well, posel garesh, it doesn't work. So why is that? Because it has to be lishma. So why wouldn't a Megillah Saita have to be written Lishma? No, come on. I mean, it's obvious why. Over there, when it comes to a get, it says Beferish Vikatavla Sefer Kritut. Vikatavla means that the actual act of writing has to be done Lishma. But over here, it doesn't say Vikatavla. It says Viasala. Viasala means that Be'inan Asiya Lishma. You need to do what is required. To do what is required is the Mechika, Asiya Adida, is the creation of the waters by erasing the Megillah Saita in the water. Okay, so you're right. That really does have to be done for that woman. But that's not a problem. If it was written for Rachel and Rachel didn't use it, so then I'm doing it for Leah, so that's okay. That's all that Rav Acha said.
Water.
Not now, man. I'm scared to drink that water. What, are you crazy? You tell me water like this? Oh, my gosh. What do you mean? A Kohen starts giving me water and I'm supposed to sit here and drink it? Are you nuts? Oh, my gosh. I can even see it's discolored. Oh, no, man. Forget it. I was going to take a drink. Oh, not now. Amar Rav Acha bar Chanina. So once we're already talking about Rabbi Meir when he was a Talmud, so, Galui v'yadu alef nevin shamar v'ayaba olam. Look, I mean, the truth is, everybody, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can tell you, you know, ein b'darosha Rabbi Meir kamoto. There's no one like Rabbi Meir in the world, in his whole generation. And therefore, we should have paskin like him. Mipnei maloka v'yuhalacha kamoto. So why do we not say automatically that halacha is like Rabbi Meir? I'll tell you why. He was too smart. Shalo yochlucha v'rav lamod asov da'ato. Because nobody could figure out what he's talking about, you see. He could tell you whatever he wanted. He could persuade you that it's 100% correct. And then he would tell you the opposite, and he would persuade you that that's 100% correct. Now, once that's true, it means you are completely without any notion of what he's really saying. Because, I mean, if you can't tell the difference, and he could just play you around like a musical instrument, so obviously you can't use his thinking in order to be able to paskin one way or another. I mean, Shu Omer al Tamei Tahar, he'll say something that's Tamei is Tahar, and he'll show you 100% logically, you are ready to swear that he's 100% right. Umar Elo Panim, and then when you finally agree, he says, no, actually, you see, what was Tahar is really Tamei, and I'll prove that to you, and oh, forget it. So while your head is spinning, so then how can you possibly use his Sfora? Now, you'll note that this is very nogea our daf yomi, because I dare say I could do the same thing to you. Ha! which means, as I've been trying to encourage you, which means that you must start learning to be able to attack this daf yomi so that you can attack me. Because otherwise, you really don't understand it. And that's all part of what I'm trying to push for. that gradually, this is a gradual process. I'm telling you, 20 minutes a day will be fine. You'll have me on the floor in a headlock in no time at all. But it's absolutely essential to be able to really do that work. And that way we'll be able to finish this. We'll be able to do the Yerushalmi and things will be exciting. And Naftali will feel much better as soon as he gets going on this. I guarantee it. And therefore, I really, really want to encourage you again that this will make all the difference to your life and therefore to our joint learning life. And I'm really anxious to get a little consent form. I need a consent form. I can't do this to you. If I can get a consent form, so then we can gradually up the ante over here, okay? So maybe I'll send out a consent form on the daf thing. But okay, anyway, so this is a perfect daf just to get us back on track over here, right? So, I mean, you wouldn't want to be stuck like the Talmidim of Rebbe Meir. Anyway, Tana, well, Rebbe Meir Shmo, really his name wasn't Rebbe Meir. His name was Rabbi Nahoroi. They only called him Rebbe Meir because he used to make people shine in halacha. So he gives so much light, which is a little bit of a problem. As the Mashal points out, light, I thought they didn't know what he was talking about. As well, even though they didn't know what he was talking about, but obviously they learned a tremendous amount from all of this exercise. And ultimately, he was able to guide them in such a way that they could come out with a halacha. But remember that Gemara in Chagiga, Aseh oznecha ka'afar chesed. Then you've got to turn your ears into a telephone receiver. There may be some people not old enough to remember what that looked like, but it used to look like an afar chesed, which was a grain hopper. And you have to knei lecha lev mevin, lishmo ez divrei amatirin ves divrei ha'osrin ves divrei ha'poslin ves divrei ha'makshirin ves divrei ha'metamim ves divrei ha'metarin. And then Rashi adds the words, and when you decide who you like, paskin that way. Exactly. So that's what we're going to be doing here at Sashem. Anyway, so they called him Rabbi Meir because he lit them up. And now here there's a problem. And the Rambam actually has this girsa in the Pirshei Mishnayos, because now it goes back to say that actually his real name originally was not Nahoroi either. His real name was Rabbi Nechemia. And some say his real name was Rabbi Elazar ben Arach. And why was he called Rabbi Nahoroi? Because he lit up the eyes, because Rabbi Nahoroi means lighting up the eyes. So there's this unbelievable girsa in the Rabbeinu Chananel that makes much more sense, which gives the real name of Rabbi Meir as Rabbi Miyaesh, the guy who brings you to despair. So, and this is a different person. So this is not Rabbi Elazar ben Arach was called Rabbi Nahoroi, and Rabbi Miyaesh was called Rabbi Meir, but both for the same reason. Omer Rebbe, Haide Mechadadna Bechavroi, look, you know, you've undoubtedly noticed that I'm much smarter than everybody else around these parts. You know why? Well, because in Shir, I used to sit right behind Rabbi Meir. So I was able to see him from the back. Now imagine how smart I would be if I could have seen him from the front, but I wasn't good enough to be in the Shir in that place. All right. But Ilu Chazite Mikameh, if I had only been able to sit in the front row, Avim Bechadad Natveh, I would have been much sharper than that. You have to see your teacher. There was one Talmud that Rabbi Meir had, whose name was Shumchus, and he would be able to give you 48 reasons if something was Tame, why it should be Tame, and 48 reasons for something was Tar, why it should be Tar. And there was, oh, this is Nogay, of course, the Pasuk, which is Mizukak Shivasayim, which that there's 7 times 7, this is Merumas in the Menorah, that there were 49 Madregas, these are Kedega, the 49 Madregas that we had until in Mitzrayim, which was the Madregas of Tuma, and it says that Moshe Rabbeinu was to the Mem Tes Shorim, Ma'at Mi Elohim, the Ma'at Mi Elohim was 49 as opposed to 50, so he wasn't given that Daga because of the inability, Lo Yarani Adam V'chai. So while he's alive, he can't be Zoha to a complete level of Bina. Tana Tamid Vatika Yabi Yavna, Shaya Metaherat Asheretz B'Meyava Chamishim Tamim. There was a particular Talmud in Yavna that had 150 ways to be Metaher Asheretz. Tosfos says, what is the point of sophistry? I understand what stupid kind of things. And like, what is the, what, there's something good about this? So actually, Tosfos says that it, and Tosfos brings examples, that it refers to particular issues that are nogea, a detail in which there actually are ways to be able to be metayer, particular situations. And he gives examples of such. So that's what it's talking about. I can give you a reason why a sheret should be tahar in general. I mean, if a nachash kills, so it kills people, which brings tumah to the world, or it kills animals, which are nevelas, and brings tumah to the world, but it itself is tahar. So a sheret, which is not deadly poisonous, it's not meimizumar batumah, shouldn't that be for sure that it's not going to be able to be metame when it itself dies? Which says, what does that have to do with anything? Velohi, I mean, what's to understand? And Maisa Kotz Bialmakov, it's not true. It's not the snake, per se. It's that the snake uses a knife and kills. So therefore what? It's got a, it has a Kotz Bialma. But it doesn't produce tuma directly. Omer Baba, Omer Shmuel. Shalosh shanim nachlaku beit shamai beit hillel. Look, for 3 years, they had these tremendous, tremendous machlokas. Halalo amrim halacha kamotinu. Halalo amrim halacha kamotinu. It was getting really, really bitter until finally, yatzta bat kova amra, elu ve'elu divrei elohim chayim. This was the basko that we talked about before. That both approaches are definitely Divrei Elohim Chaim, they definitely all make sense, and there's a consistent vision of Torah that would allow for both of these approaches. However, the halacha is like Beit Hillel. Well, it doesn't make sense. I mean, if Elo Velo Divrei Elohim Chaim, so why can't you just do what you want? I mean, why would we be koveya the halacha like Beit Hillel? Mipnei mazachu Beit Hillel l'gboa halacha kamotan. That's because of the way that they related. That's because they were nochim, they were easygoing. They were aluvim ayu, they were patient people. And not only that, they would never just say their approach. They would always address Beit Shammai's approach. So if Beit Shammai brings a raya, they would talk about that raya, like this, like the Gemara, in, like the Mishnah in that started with the Machlokas back in Brachas, about Kriyat Shema, B'shoch B'chov Kumecha. So they would explain, no, we understand that's a very beautiful raya, b'shach v'chumecha, but what does it mean? It means b'sha'ah sh'bnei adam komim, b'sha'ah sh'bnei adam shochvim. But it says v'lech t'chav aderech, which means that it has to be able to be anyway, not the particular physical stance that you're in. Fine, so in other words, they didn't just say what they felt. They explained why it was that they could still take very seriously what Beit Shammai said, and which most people don't do. They just ignore what the other person says. Not only that, if they ever were quoting something about Beit Shammai, they would always put Beit Shammai first, before they put themselves. Here, well, I'll give you an example. Remember the Mishnah that talks about the question of whether you're allowed to sit and eat at the right at the end of your sukkah, so that you're mostly in the sukkah, but you don't have room for your entire body, but you're bending over your table, and your table's in the sukkah, and you're eating over the table, right? So it says over there that Mishaya Roshovaru Bo Basukkah, so Beit Shammai says, no, that's not kosher. And Beit Hillel says, it is. And look how Beit Hillel addressed Beit Shammai. Lo kachayama said, didn't it happen that Ziknei Beit Shammai, know who they put first? The Ziknei Beit Shammai went together with Ziknei Beit Hillel, and they went to visit Rabbi Yochanan ben Achorani, and he found, he was sitting there, they found him sitting, he was right at the edge. He had a table in his house, and he had just enough that was in the sukkah, so that he was essentially in the sukkah. And apparently it was fine. So how are you arguing? But meanwhile, note that they quoted, before they spoke about the Ziknei Beit Hillel, they spoke about the Ziknei Beit Shammai. Omrulan Beit Shammai, happens to be that Beit Shammai responded, this part isn't nogeya us. What, Bisham Raya? On the contrary. They told him, the Ziknei Beit Shammai, told Rabbi Yochanan ben Achoranit, Im kach hayita noheg, this is the way you've been doing sukkah? You were never yotzer a mitzvah sukkah in your life if this is your only sukkah. So anyway, but the point is, lametcha, the fact that you paskin like somebody because of the way that they acted in terms of their midas, you learn from here that kol hamashpil atzmo, hakadosh baruch hu magbiyo, someone who makes himself shafel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is koveh and halacha like him in this case, in whatever the case is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be lift him up. People that search to make themselves choshev, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mashpilo. If somebody's trying to be choshev, then that chashivas runs away from him. But whoever runs away from gedula, gedula keeps looking for him until it finally catches him. People who see that they are not being successful, and they keep pushing at it. I'm going to do this, I'll do something else. And every single time they start something, it fails. And they keep pushing. They haven't gotten the message. So he keeps being pushed away by time. Somebody who recognizes, look, I'm clearly not the guy to be doing this thing at this point, so I have to learn to deal with it some other way. So then eventually, Tana Rabbanan, the famous machlokes that gets down to the roots of the human condition, was an issue between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, which is why the chashivas of their machlokes are so fundamental. And it was 2.5 years that they had the following machlokes. Halalu amrun noach lo adam shelo nivra yoter mishanivra. So we don't know who said what. One side was claiming that it is a lot easier for humans never have been to create it. And others say, no, it's noach lo adam shenivra yoter mishelo nivra. It's much more real for the person, and it fits him. It's not that it's just imposed upon him. And in the end, it's kedai for him. And in the end, nimnu v'gamru, so they took a vote, and they ended up paskening that noach lo adam shelo nivra yoter mishenivra. And we have to admit that, in fact, it would have been a lot lighter for a human being not to have been created. Achshav shenivra, now that he was created already, so he can still deal with that issue. Tosfos, by the way, points out that this is only true for people who haven't utilized their life. In other words, people are given these immense opportunities, and they do absolutely nothing with it. But of course, if you're talking about somebody who has used his life in such a way that he's been zocher to be a tzaddik and a chokham and so on, I mean, he wouldn't tell you for a moment that it would have been noach for him not to have been created. Okay, that's what Tosfos says. That's obviously a lot to discuss over here. If they talked about it for 2.5 years, I guarantee you it's not the five lines in Tosfos that they were talking about. So anyway, now that he's created, what should he do? Well, some say, yefashfesh b'ma'asav. What he should do is he should constantly go through his life as it has passed so far. And he should re-examine every decision that he made, every action that he took, and see whether he wants to revise it by doing teshuvah, which would essentially give him an opportunity now to relive every one of those moments constantly, because he could constantly do teshuvah and then turn anything that wasn't successful into something that was successful. So that's the best solution to anything that's not noach. Others say that the best thing for him to do is yimashmesh b'masav, which Rashi understands yimashmesh b'masav means to actualize, meaning in his mind, when he is standing before a future determination of what to do, he should make it mamash, and he should make it into an actuality and think, okay, this is what I lose by doing this mitzvah, and this is what I gain by doing this mitzvah. This is what I gain by doing this avera, or this is what I lose by not doing this avera. And that way, it will actualize his life in such a way that he's really going to start living it normally. That's Rashi's pshat. Mesillas Yesharim talks about the difference in the level of diuk between pishpush and mishpush. But fine, we can go with Rashi here. And now we would be ready for Richie, but instead we are going to call upon Doc, who has been studiously sitting there right in front of that beautiful su'udah behind his chair. It's okay, you don't have to move. We know what's going on. And just give it to us. A Korah. Talking about this Korah. Now, we never gave you the details of the Korah, right? So the Korah that we were talking about, it has to be wide enough to hold a half an ariach. And a half an ariach, the ariach was the standard brick that they used for construction, which was the kind of full building blocks that they use today, not the half blocks. And the full building blocks is 3 tefachim by 3 tefachim. So then the half building block, as it is today, also really the half bricks that we use today, are 3 tefachim by 1.5 tefachim. So it should be enough to hold an Ariach. An Ariach is a Chatzi Levena Shel Shlosha Tefachim, and a Korah really only has to be one Tefach wide, because that way you could hold it along its width, which is 1.5. The Gemara is going to ask, well, last I heard 1.5 doesn't equal 1. Rechava, and it has to be wide enough, as we said, but it also has to be strong enough to actually be able to hold that brick. So now we're talking about both the tensile strength of the material and the measurement of the material. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no. It only needs to be wide enough. It does not have to be strong enough. Of course, this just means to be theoretically wide enough. It doesn't really have to hold a brick, obviously, and theoretically strong enough, but there's no bricks involved. So therefore, I would say, let's say it's made out of straw, right? Or it's made out of bamboo. So then just imagine, if this amount of straw would have actually been metal, would have been able to hold a brick? Yeah, so that's fine. I also say, let's say it's bent. Okay, so instead of going straight across, it's at an angle. So then you can't really put a brick on it because the brick is going to fall off. Okay, so then look at it as if it were straight and see if it could theoretically, if it were straight, it would be okay. How about if it's round, meaning it's like a pole? So if it's a pole, so then view it as if it were square. In other words, cut the pole into two and use the square part, so to speak, virtually speaking. What would be the halachic requirement for such a thing? Now here, as we know, the Torah gives us a lot of leeway in terms of how it is that we use measurements, right? Because obviously we're very limited into how exact we can do measurements, especially when talking about pi, because we can't measure pi. So what are we supposed to do? So therefore, the Torah gives us essentially a rounded off version. How far can we round off a value like pi, which then becomes questions like how far can we round off the square root of 2 when it's nogea lahalacha, which will always be nogea in cases where we're dealing with a square. So in all of those cases, we know that we have rayas from the Torah how to break it down. And as we're going to see, we have a raya in the Torah of how it is that we break down pi into the most simple way in which pi equals 3. And therefore, kol sheyesh b'hekefos shlosha tefachim, you can treat it as if it has a rochav tefach, and that would be perfectly good. Okay, so that gives us our exciting beginning for tomorrow, because now you can get spend the night reading up on all of your geometry, so we'll be able to do the daf tomorrow very quickly. You just got to remember, I think it's the 8th grade or 9th grade, and everything should be fine, which should not be too difficult, right? Okay. Also, please do bring a calculator. Not because it's difficult for us to figure out what the Gemara is saying about pi, but because the Torah also gives you the correct value for pi in the same pasuk that it gives you the incorrect value for pi. But for that, you do need a calculator. So we'll take a look at that tomorrow. Okay. Kol tov, everyone. Have a wonderful, wonderful Mitzvah Shabbos.